welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It's a Thanksgiving show, which means you're going to get to hear my mom today. You know, I've done this show for 3 years, and I've had my oldest daughter in to talk about memories, because that's a lot of what Thanksgiving is, at least in our family, or Christmas, or when we get together, it's memories. And I've had some great ones. So mom's in this studio with me today, and we're going to have a good time. She is a precious lady, been a wonderful mom, wonderful wife to my dad. And I'm excited to have her in the studio with me today. And, you know, if you're like me today, this is Saturday after Thanksgiving. You stuffed yourself on Thanksgiving. You have been living on turkey salad sandwiches, warmed over dressing and gravy. You might have made it out in the woods a few times, but you know, it's a Saturday afternoon. Football games are going. You're in a slightly comatose state from all the dressing and gravy. So just lay back, relax. You know, if you got kids in the house, they can get up and get your drink refilled and another snack or two. But, and just listen and think back to when you were a kid growing up, or memories you have with your kids, and enjoy it. It's going to be a fun show. It is Thanksgiving, or has been Thanksgiving. It's Thanksgiving holidays. And I wanted to read just a little something from history. I kind of do this on special occasions. It's Thanksgiving history. And this is George Washington's Thanksgiving Proclamation, New York, October the 3rd, 1789. By the President of the United States of America, proclamation. Whereas it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to implore His protection and favor. And whereas both houses of Congress have by their joint committee requested me to recommend to the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many signal favors of Almighty God, especially by affording them an opportunity peaceably to establish a form of government for their safety and happiness. Now, therefore, I do recommend and assign Thursday, the 26th day of November, next to be devoted by the people of these states to the service of that great and glorious being who is the beneficent author of all the good that was, that is, or that will be, that we may all unite in rendering unto him sincere and humble thanks for his kind care and protection of the people of this country previous to their becoming a nation, for the signal and manifold mercies and the favorable interpositions of his providence which we experienced in the tranquility, union, and plenty, which we have since enjoyed for the peaceable and national manner in which we have enabled to establish constitutions of government for our safety and have since enjoyed, for our safety and happiness, and particularly the national one now lately instituted, for the civil and religious liberty for which we are blessed and the means we have of acquiring and diffusing useful knowledge, and in general for all the great and various favors which he have been pleased to confer upon us. And also that we may then unite in most humbly offering our prayers and supplications to the great Lord and ruler of nations, and beseech him to pardon our national and other transgressions, to enable us all, whether in public or private stations, to perform our several and relative duties properly and punctually, to render our national government a blessing to all the people by constantly being a government of wise, just, constitutional laws, discreetly and faithfully executed and obeyed, to protect and guide all sovereigns and nations, especially such as have shown kindness unto us, and to bless them with good government, peace, and concord, to promote the knowledge and practice of true religion and virtue, and the increase of science among them and us, and generally to grant unto all mankind such a degree of temporal prosperity as he alone knows to be best. Given under my hand at the city of New York, the 3rd day of October in the year of our Lord, 1789, George Washington. You know, it's kind of hard to follow. Some difficult words in there, especially to read and pronounce. But think about what Thanksgiving is. You know, it's got a long history. It's sometimes a contentious history of our country. But think of the things we have to be thankful for today. Think of what they had to be thankful for then. Think of what they just come through as a colonies, as a struggling nation, and where we were back in 1789. And then think about the words that George Washington wrote and spoke. And it's pretty cool. It really is. You know, there's a lot to be thankful for. And on this Thanksgiving Day, I won't bore you with what I'm thankful for, but I will tell you this. I'm thankful for those of you out there who have ever purchased a firearm, ammunition, archery, bow and arrows, fishing lures, rods and reels, a hunting or fishing license, or even fueled up your boat, because you have contributed to the most successful effort, conservation effort in the world. You know, we're 82 years into the Pittman-Robertson Act. We're 66 years into the Dingell-Johnson Sport Fish Restoration Act. Since 1937, more than $86 million has come back to South Carolina, resulting in the wise management and conservation of many species of wildlife, including the restoration of deer, turkey, and wood ducks. On the fishing side, since 1950, more than $85 million has come to South Carolina for wise management and conservation of our lakes, rivers, and coastal waterways, and tremendous accomplishments such as the culture of the world-famous landlocked striped bass. So, again, it's Thanksgiving Day. That's just one thing that outdoorsmen, if you've done any of those things, I'm thankful you're out there. Look forward to you passing it on to the next generation, and they can be thankful to us for doing our part for conservation, not only here in South Carolina, but across the nation. So hang on. We'll be back with more Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side of the break.
Cry no more.
Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It's Saturday after Thanksgiving. All of us are laying around like a stuffed tick. You know, we eating way too much, and everybody knows what that's like. Look, this year, you know, in past years, I've always had to eat one Thanksgiving meal at around 11 o'clock in the morning and then another at 4 o'clock. Thanks to my brother who broke the string, because he was in Georgia this weekend with his daughter and her husband, I actually got to enjoy two separate Thanksgiving meals. Actually, we got one coming up this evening, because this is the Saturday after Thanksgiving, and we've got the Mets Thanksgiving today.
That's right. Yeah. Sure have.
Well, if you've never listened before on Thanksgiving, it's the third year I've done this, and it's been fun for me. I understand some people have enjoyed them too, so. But what I do is the first year, I think I had my oldest daughter, Jordan, in here, and we just talked about memories, mostly outdoor memories. And then last year, I think I did my brother, and that was kind of fun. So this year, I'm really honored to have my mom.
Thank you, Roger, for asking me to come.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, this is sort of unique.
Yeah, it is. It is very unique. For those of you that don't know my mom, she grew up in Chester County. She went to the Baptist College in Columbia to get her nursing degree. And then you went to Milledgeville, Georgia for something.
Psychiatric training.
Okay, psychiatric training, which she used on my brother and I. and probably my dad to this day. she met my dad on a sidewalk in Columbia. He was in the Navy. They got married on October the 6th, 1957, which means they've been married 59 years.
Correct. Yes.
Are you going to make it to 60?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Seems like yesterday.
Seems like yesterday, I'm sure. I can remember those days when it was just the two of Debbie and I. She taught nursing. She worked in nursing homes. She went back to school, got her dental hygiene degree. She's a breast cancer survivor. How many years now? 31 years?
Yes.
31 years, mm-hmm. 1984.
Right.
And I was a senior in high school. That's about all I remember about it. For some reason or another, it's just kind of something I don't remember.
Well, we just took it in stride.
Yeah, we did.
Yes.
And during the same time she was undergoing chemo and radiation, she was finishing her degree at the Medical University of South Carolina.
Yes.
Watched her graduate from MUSC. she was a great boy's mom, because she kicked us out of the house and made us go do things outdoors, because the only two things we were allowed to do inside was when it was raining, we could play basketball in one of the rooms. We took a coat hanger, bent it, jammed it in the door jamb, and played basketball in the bedrooms.
Right.
And we were allowed to roller skate in the kitchen.
Right.
Around the table.
You practice your high jumps
in
the kitchen too.
Yes, we practiced our high jumps. Yeah, there's a a wall, a partial wall in the kitchen across the top of it, and it's got still got fingerprints to this day.
Right.
And we also have the measuring chart, the height measuring chart on the wall.
Right.
She has been a wonderful grandmother to five granddaughters.
Absolutely.
Which is a reward for having two boys.
That's right. Yes.
She actually taught Latin to three of her granddaughters.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And all five of them stayed with you. In fact, my 12-year-old still comes down once every other week and stays a few hours with you.
That's why we get so young.
Had young people around you.
That's right.
So that's a little bit about my mom. Maybe I can convince Dad to come in next year. I'll lean on him really hard.
That's
right. I'll lean on him really hard. I'll save Dad for next year. But it was. She was, I know I'm here because she spent so many days on her knees.
I did.
That's probably the only way I survived.
Exactly.
Because I did some really stupid things growing up.
Well, we all do that. We do survive by prayer.
Yeah, we do. I have logged to not be a traveling salesman, I have put a ton of miles on the road. Every year, whether it's to go hunting, to go out west, to travel with my family, to travel with the radio show. And for those of you who have a mom like this, you know exactly the kind of lady I'm talking about.
Well, you're awfully complimentary. But Roger, you and Paul both have been such blessings, and your wives and our little granddaughters. And I've had a wonderful husband and parents. And also, I've really lived a blessed life.
Yeah, we have. We really have. But this show is all about memories.
Yes.
And, you know, when I was thinking back of what, there are some that vividly stood out in my mind and some that you say stood out in your mind.
That's right.
And I try to kind of bend these to the outdoors, but if they're not, that's fine because, you know, holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas is when you're around your family, you sit around the table, and it always goes back to things that happened 5 years ago. Do you remember this? And it's that way at our house. Most of the time at Thanksgiving and Christmas, the conversation always goes back.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we laugh and we have a good time remembering and all. And that's what I kind of want to mirror on the show on Thanksgiving, because a lot of families are just gotten up for the table and they're laying around the couch watching football. And they probably did the same thing we do.
Right. Right. I've found out since I've gotten older that, my memories go back when you were small, the children and all. As you've grown up, seems like the really memories that I should have, you were visiting, we were visiting,
that's
we
right.
didn't have that
that's
many.
That's exactly right.
Maybe that's the way life should be.
That's probably the way everybody does.
Right.
But anyway, as a gentleman that you raised, I'll let you go first.
Thank you. Well, what I did is I thought about back in years past, and what came to my mind, really striking, that's what I wrote down.
Okay.
But when you were a little boy, three of them went together. One of them was the garden. You remember the garden?
Oh, yes. I loved the garden.
You loved the garden.
I did.
He loved picking the squash and the cucumbers. And the sweetest picture we have is you sitting by the cucumber row, and you have this big basket of cucumbers that you couldn't carry.
No.
But you were saying they're loving picking those cucumbers.
When we say garden, this is a Chester County garden.
Yes.
This is not the five rows by 20 feet I have in my backyard today. Look, we had a tractor, we had disc harrow, we had cultivators, you know, we had hose, and we had a garden that was probably almost an acre.
Mm-hmm. It was really big.
And we canned and we froze and we ate that all year long and we did it again the next year. So it was not, when we say cucumber patch, I mean the cucumber patch. That's why the basket was so full. Go ahead.
Yes. Along with that, excuse me, is the calves. We were raising calves at that time. And you had one favorite called Penelope.
Yes.
And she was your pet. And one day, I missed you. And I looked out towards the pasture, the pump house, and Penelope was laying on the ground. And Roger had his head on Penelope's belly, and he was asleep. They both were asleep. So that was the picture that came to my mind.
Penelope was, she was spoiled rotten.
She was.
She was. We would go out there, and it was Butch.
Right.
Which was our beagle.
Yes.
And Penelope and me.
Mm-hmm.
And Dad had, at all times, he had different kinds of cow feed.
Yes.
So it might be the little pellet stuff or it might be sweet feed. Now, for those of you not familiar with sweet feed, Sweet Feet has molasses in it. Oh, and it had oats.
Smelled good.
Oh, it had oats and wheat and, you know, whatever else. So picture this, me with a bucket of whatever feed I could get a hold of, and Butch got a little bit, and he liked it, and Penelope got a little bit, and she liked it, and I got a little bit, and I liked it. So any lasting effects in my life could come from the effects of Sweet Feed. I don't know.
Maybe that's why you're so good at this, the Sweet Feed. And the third thing that goes with that is when we had the snow and ice formed over it, we sledded all the way down the pasture. So those three things sort of went together. So that's what I included in my memories.
The garden was a big thing for us.
Yes.
We planted it. We watered it. We weeded it. Mm-hmm. We harvested it. And we canned it.
And froze it.
And to go along with that, you know, John and Renee Feaster and Toby mm-hmm. would come over and we'd shuck corn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we'd play the Beatles.
Yeah.
We'd take the silk and put it on our head and pretend we were the Beatles. That's one of those things that's just emblazoned on my mind. Right there in the corner of the porch, laying amongst, right. I don't know how many ears of corn, and we had all this corn silk all over us and all.
I know, yeah.
And,
yeah.
But, is that all three?
Yes, that's the three. I have more.
Oh, okay.
I have more. Good. I just clenched those together. That was one.
You know, the garden, Penelope, what was the third one?
Sliding down the ice.
Let me tell you what.
Wow.
The farm in Chester sits, the house sits up on a little knoll. And the big pasture, what we always call the big pasture, mm-hmm. slopes away out in front mm-hmm. to the pond.
Mm-hmm.
The pond is 300 yards from the house.
Probably so, yeah.
Now, I know that because you have Google Earth. And you can go Google Earth, and you can drop a pin at the house and go to the pond. It's 300 yards. And when that snow, because we had some big snows back then.
We did. We have one picture of you is up to your knees, yeah. But you were a little boy, too.
I was a little boy, so, you know. you know, kind of comparisons a little bit, yeah. It was still deep, but that froze over. The pond froze over. You could sled from the house mm-hmm. to the pond over 300 yards.
Yeah.
Now you didn't do it, but two or three times because you had to walk back up. But yeah,
that was amazing.
That was an amazing
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm. We don't have it now.
No, we don't have it now.
But that's my first one.
That's your first one.
Yes.
And those are vivid, and I can remember that picture. And I don't know if I remember that picture because. I remember seeing the picture because I remember how much fun I had in mm-hmm. the cucumber patch.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the time the snake showed up in the cucumber patch?
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah, I remember a time mm-hmm. I was out picking cucumbers. It was just a corn snake.
Mm-hmm.
But corn snakes look like copperheads.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't think my feet touched the ground until I got to the house. But then again, I was just a little kid, you know? Anyway, well, in coming up with mine, I wondered what I wanted to talk about. And I have some ideas, but I want to get to the biggest one first. Dad didn't hunt.
Right.
Obviously you didn't hunt.
No, I didn't.
But in those years after we moved from Chester to Greenville, during the deer season, y'all would get up on Saturday morning at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. We would drive to Chester. So I could go deer hunt. Why? I know y'all enjoy going to Chester. Don't get me wrong. Cause that was uh-huh. your home and mm-hmm. your first place when, you know, that's the first place y'all really owned and it's still in the family now. Why would y'all get up at 4 o'clock in the morning on cold mornings? I remember some of those mornings, you know, I didn't stay in the stand, but maybe 45 minutes or an hour. Uh-huh. And when I say stand, I'm talking about a couple of 2x6s nailed up into a tree. Because I didn't have the clothes for it. My hands would turn blue. I get cold. As parents, what made y'all get up at that unearthly hour of the morning to drive an hour and a half to let me go hunting and then drive back at lunchtime?
Well, I love, for one thing. And two, you had energy and you had interest. And so it was worth doing that for you. And three, it gave us a chance to go over there too.
Okay.
But we had to give you the opportunity to have experiences and use up that energy if you got a deer or something, that was worthwhile too. So it was love.
Okay.
Love.
I never knew, you know, and I remember those mornings that we'd get up and it always seemed to be just ice cold. I don't know. Maybe that was just the mornings I remembered. I don't remember the mornings where I sat up there. It was nice and pleasant. But I remember one morning in particular, we got up, drove to Chester. I don't know what y'all did when I went deer hunting, but I remember I had, there was a forked pine tree.
Mm-hmm.
You remember you went down below the loading pin up across the hill.
Right.
There was a forked pine tree over there. I had, dad had helped me nail up a couple of boards between the two pine trees and laid a couple across. And it was so cold. I don't think I stayed more than 45 minutes. I don't think the sun was barely up yet.
Yeah.
And I came back in. And I remember that morning it just being so cold. And when I was thinking about this, I was thinking, why in the world would they get up and drive and 3 hour drive going and coming for me to knowing that I probably wouldn't go last very long, but you did it anyway.
Well, I think your dad would have done most anything for you all, for me. And, just he gave you that opportunity. He would do that for you.
And that's one thing parents today, you have to give kids the opportunity.
You've got to.
You know, too often, it was easy for y'all. I mean, it was a different lifetime. We're talking the mid-70s,
right.
80s. It's a different world altogether. But y'all made that kind of effort back then. Parents today can make the same kind of effort.
Right. Times have really changed, though.
Yeah.
People are so busy. You have to just make time to do things like that. And, of course, we were blessed with the place in Chester.
Right, we
were. And we had ties over there.
Yeah.
And I would think that for a long time we felt like that was home,
sure.
Even though we lived here in Greenville.
Right.
That was home.
Yeah.
And I think we all enjoyed going back over there.
We did. We had oil heaters.
Yes. Yeah,
so
exactly.
We'd get over there and light the oil. Light the oil heater and it'd heat up a kitchen and you just sit in there. And that was another thing about coming back from deer hunting. I knew it was going to be just nice and toasty and I'd get over there in the corner in the rocking chair and could just unthaw.
Right.
Well, I think, you know, we've run a little bit here. Let's go to the bottom of the hour break, take that break, come back, share a couple more. Laugh a little more.
Right.
And just relive some memories.
Love it.
All right.
Hang on
through the break. We'll be back with more Woods and Water, South Carolina. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I hope you're having a great Thanksgiving. I am. I'm sitting here with my mom.
Hello.
If you haven't been listening, mom is with me today. We're just talking about some memories of growing up in the country. And it's her turn.
I'm going to put one ahead of all the rest.
Go ahead.
It's when I learned of your boating skills.
Oh, no.
You all were in Charleston, and we were in Garden City, so we rode down to visit you all one night. And you had the boat down there. And the Charleston Bridge, the new one, had opened up.
Right.
So we decided, even though it was getting late, that we wanted to go see the bridge at night. Well, now, I'm not a very good lover of water. But anyway, we did.
Yes.
Jordan and myself and you took out on that boat. And it was getting dusk, and I had no idea boating skills. But I tell you one thing, that was when I was so thankful that you knew how to read buoys and go which way the flashing lights went. The bridge was beautiful.
It was absolutely gorgeous.
And I really admire your boating skills, but the shore never looks so good.
Well, you know...
But it was amazing. It was amazing. I did not know that you were so versed in nautical skills. So I was really impressed.
Well, that just goes to my upbringing. Because you didn't do anything until you were prepared to do it.
Good.
You know? I don't know. I couldn't have had the boat for more than a year or two.
Right.
At that time.
Right.
That would have been 2007 or 8, somewhere in there.
Something like that.
And it was a little spooky. I hadn't been in the harbor.
Uh-huh.
I mean, to those of you, I've got a little flats boat. So we weren't in a big boat. We were in a 16 foot 9 inch flats boat. And I was kind of nervous about it. I knew we put in Shem Creek.
Right.
Just idled out Shem Creek between all the restaurants and all.
Right.
And then you can go one of two ways, and that's either right. You can go at the bottom, I guess it'd be the top end of Crab Bank. There's a small cut there.
Right.
But there's a huge mud bank off to the right towards the golf course. So at that time, I wasn't comfortable enough to go through there at night. I'll run it in the daytime, no problem. But at nighttime, I was just a little bit iffy. But you can turn left and run up around all the docks there behind Crab Bank and then come across into the – and normally, if I put in Shem Creek at night, I was going dock light trout fishing. So I'd go all the way up and cut in behind Sullivan's Island.
Okay.
And go back at the Intercoastal Waterway and fish. So making the right-hand turn out into the – harbor at night was a little bit on my part. I wasn't near as comfortable as you make me sound or confident, but you wanted to see the bridge.
I did.
And and you had never been out on my boat before.
That's right.
And yeah, we made it out to the bridge and it was beautiful.
It was.
Uh-huh. And for you aspiring seamen, red right returning is the rule of thumb.
Okay.
If you're coming in from the ocean, you keep red buoys on your right. Red right returning from the sea. It's just a simple rule. And, of course, if you're coming inland going out to sea, your red buoys would be on your left.
Right.
So it's just a reverse thing.
Well.
So it's not quite as complicated as you make it sound. But being out in Charleston Harbor, and, of course, at that time there probably wasn't near as much boat traffic as it is now.
Right.
But, yeah, it was kind of disconcerting taking that turn out into the harbor and in a small boat at night with my mom and my daughter on it.
All right. But it worked out well, and it's a memory that I keep.
I'm glad. Forever. Because you are not fond of the water.
Well, I never learned to swim.
Yeah.
And so that if you don't know how to swim, you just have this innate fear.
Right.
And so I'll let my ankles go in.
You don't have to worry about shark bites if you can still see your toes.
That's right. And I do like my toes.
You do like your toes. Well, that's interesting. I would have never picked that one.
Well, I was very impressed. Still am.
Good. I'm glad. Just don't ask my wife about all the time to run out of gas.
Well, thank goodness you didn't that night.
One of the earliest memories I have of the outdoors, other than just being, you know, out there just running around like two wild Indians or whatever, was y'all gave Paul a shotgun for Christmas.
Yeah.
410 single shot.
Yeah. I had a fit. It says, he's not ready for it, Dad. He's not ready for it. Yes, he is. Okay.
And, of course, we weren't allowed to go hunting by ourselves. Dad worked, and you worked, but your hours were a little different than his.
Right.
And I remember you taking Paul squirrel hunting. And Paul had already had the squirrel pegged. I mean, he knew which squirrel he was going after. He probably had it timed down to when the squirrel was going to come out of the tree and all. But I remember, and this is just hilarious. we were sitting there. It was a dead tree. Yeah. I think it was a dead red oak, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm not sure.
This goes back. This is like 1971. 71, 72. Mm-hmm. This goes back a long time.
It does.
Squirrel came out of the tree. I heard the click of the hammer. I heard the gun go off. Squirrel hit the ground, and Mom goes, "What? What?" I don't think you realized he was actually going to shoot the squirrel.
I kept telling him, "Don't shoot him! Don't shoot him! Don't shoot him!" Bam! I was proud of it afterwards.
It was a learning experience. It was, but I remember Mom going, I just don't think she really expected Paul to pull the trigger on that squirrel. I think as much a shock for you as it was for Paul.
I got used to it though.
Yeah.
Because I kept taking y'all around.
You did? And another thing, we always ate what we shot.
Yes. Yes. Squirrels.
Yeah.
Fried rabbit.
Yeah. You made us actually quit squirrel hunting because you didn't like the look of a squirrel.
In the pot.
Kind of overgrown rat or a small possum.
So tell people that they might not have to eat it one of these days.
Well, that's fine. I mean, squirrel itself was good.
It was very good.
But just the look of it, you know, and we didn't need it.
No.
But yeah, I remember that. I remember hearing the click of the gun go off, and I really don't think Mom was ready for that.
I don't think I ever have seen you shoot anything.
No.
Oh, we went, but
well, by the time I came along, we started hunting. We were deer hunting.
That's true.
And there weren't many deer around. That's true. You know.
Right.
But yeah, squirrels were abundant. Quail were abundant. Rabbits. Yeah. And we had a lot of small game growing up. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Paul was the
even the neighbor's duck.
I have to get you and Paul on here to talk about that one.
Yes, we will.
You know, looking back on that, I mean, he was out of season. He was using lead shot. Of course, I don't know if the mandatory, it might have been okay to shoot lead shot back then. That was just hilarious.
Yeah, that was funny.
And I think Paul and I talked about that last year.
Did you? Really? Yeah. Okay.
But anyway, that was one of mine. Yours.
All right. Okay. And one of the sweetest memories, and I have pictures of this, of you when you were a youth, was when you got your first camouflage outfit.
Okay.
And your hat. And did you have is that when Dad gave you the gun?
I don't think I had a gun
yet. Didn't have, you had maybe an air rifle or something,
yeah,
BB gun.
Yeah.
And so I got the camera, and it was fall. The leaves were beautiful.
Yep.
And we walked all around
over the place.
And took pictures of you. And we have one with you framed by the background of the pond and framed by leaves.
Yep.
And the sun is right on you, you know, and that is the most precious picture. And we have one of you sitting down with your hat on your rifle.
Yeah.
And we had such a good outing that day. We walked all over
the place
and made pictures and enjoyed things.
That was, I had actually Paul's 410.
Oh, did
with
you?
With a slug in
okay.
it. I remember the gun. And I was, 6 years old, 7 years old?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
And,
maybe seven.
Yeah, we'd gone walking. I remember we walked by the old barn and house on the hill and into the edge of Mr. Frank Cato's field.
Yeah.
And the edge of that field was sandy, and there were actually some deer tracks in the sand. I remember there were some deer tracks there.
Okay, yeah.
And back in those days, folks, you know, seeing a deer track was, you know, the hair stood up on the back of your neck, and it was like a deer has been here.
Yeah.
Type thing. Cause they hadn't proliferated out of Sumter National Forest yet.
Right.
But yeah, that was a great walk.
It was
one of those just one of those fall days that just the colors, the temperature, everything was just great. But I can see that picture. I think we used that in our wedding video when Debbie and I got married.
I think you did. Yeah. So that was really, that came out really well.
Yeah.
That stuck in my mind.
It stuck in.
Yeah.
You know. okay, boys and girls, you are an aspiring deer hunter. You have your first gun at this point. Dad had given me a single shot 20 gauge. No, actually, I was using the old Winchester 3220.
Okay, I don't know.
Which was a gun that had been passed down from Uncle Frank to Granddaddy Metz to
something like
Dad
that.
To Paul. I guess Paul's got it now.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go deer hunting. And there again, my deer stand was up an oak tree, you walked out a little limb, and the limb split, and I had about three boards nailed together that was the seat.
Mm-hmm.
But I was too young to go by myself. So, who gets up to go deer hunting with me but Mom? And we go to my deer stand, and Mom, what are you going to do? Well, I'll find something to do. And so okay, whatever. And I climbed up the oak tree, had some boards nailed to the steps, and got settled into my deer stand such that you could get settled on a couple of 2x4s, and turned around looking for Mom on the ground, and she wasn't there. She was about 10 feet up in a tree behind me.
I just shocked him to death. He almost fell out of
my
deer stand.
Out of my tree stand. How in the world did you get up in the tree? And I mean, you just don't think of your mom climbing a tree.
Listen, when we grew up, I stayed in the trees. As high up as I could get. And with the wind blowing, I'd sit up and swing and sing.
Really?
Yes, sir. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. So it was easy.
It was easy. I just could not believe my eyes that my mom was up in a tree. Behind me.
You'd never seen that.
No, I'd never seen that. It was a shock to my system. You know, no longer did I consider myself the great white hunter because my mom could do the same thing without steps and without something to sit on.
Oh,
How many of you out there have had your mother take you deer hunting and outdone you? When you get it up in a tree.
But I've never shot at a deer. Never had that that experience because, you know, I just haven't had that much to do with guns, but I love them.
Yeah. But that was what it took. You had to take me, see that I could do it.
Right.
And that was it. You just let me go after
right,
that.
Right, right. We could always trust you boys. I never worried about you being irresponsible with the gun. And I think your dad really, really pressed that on you all. And we tormented the woods now.
Yeah. We didn't quite live in fear for our lives if we did something wrong with the gun. But it was close.
Well, he was firm about
it. Oh, he was.
Which he had to be.
He had to be. Boys need a firm dad.
Mm-hmm.
And giving kids a gun is a huge responsibility.
It really is.
And that's where safety comes first. And we were always taught safety. I mean, you know, even though he didn't hunt, he knew muzzle needed to be pointed in a safe direction. Mm-hmm. Check every gun, make sure it was unloaded. And like I said, we didn't live in fear for our lives if we did something wrong, but there was a healthy fear of doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. Not so much for the consequences, but I don't think we want to disappoint Dad.
Right. Exactly.
And a lot of it was, I want to handle this correctly so I don't have to Dad have to.
He set high standards for you all. He really did. And everything that we have amounted to, he's been right there at the foundation.
He has.
And the rock.
Yep, he has.
Yeah, we've had the fun.
Take a minute before we go. What was it? Because it was his decision to let us hunt.
Right.
I will go on. We'll get that in a minute.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Give me your next one.
All right. The one thing that stuck in my mind, it has a poignant memory to me. Because when you were a teen.
Okay.
And we went down to Mom and Dad's.
Right.
And you went out behind the barn there and you killed a deer.
Yes. First deer.
Yes. And we heard the shot and we all went out and you were meeting us and you said, I got him.
Yeah.
I got him. And Dad helped you bring him back.
Yep.
And that was about a week before my dad passed,
wasn't it?
It
was.
And, I was so excited about the fact that you got your deer. We were down at Mom and Dad's, and we had that experience, you know.
You know, that memory to me is probably one of the best ones of Granite Bramlett.
Mm-hmm. I know.
To set the stage with you, it was we used to go down and visit them.
Mm-hmm.
Every weekend we were in Chester, they were your mom and dad. They lived, 10 miles away from where we were?
About five miles
mm-hmm. from our place in Chester. And we get down there and see them regularly. So it wasn't anything to go down there. And actually, I was on a crow hunting mission this morning.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
By this time, I had my own shotgun. Dad gave me a 20-gauge shotgun.
Right.
Single shot. And I'd gone down there to shoot crows because the pecan trees. They were always taking grandmother's pecans off, and she loved pecans. Mm-hmm. And also, I was going to do, well, you can't stalk a crow. I'm sorry. You just,
smart.
As much as I tried, I was very persistent. I couldn't get close enough to them. So I had a couple of slugs in my pocket. And because I said, well, you know, it's deer season. I'm just going to see if there are any deer around. So when I left the pecan trees, I just slipped a slug in there, having no thought. And at that time, it was a field behind the house until you got to the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Got back to the woods, and
it's a hollow back there.
It's a hollow back there on the creek bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember three deer jumped up. And, I mean, I wasn't expecting. Three deer jumped up. Two of them ran one way. One ran kind of up beside me and stopped. Broadside to me, the gun came up, triggered, and it was pure reflex. That had to be from reading so many Outdoor Life magazines and Field and Stream magazines, because I'd never shot at a deer before that time, and this happened, and the deer ran about 10 yards.
We had to hunt it.
And I started sweating. I was shaking. I mean, it was typical buck fever. I ran back to the house. Mm-hmm. Y'all were coming out. I said, I got a deer. And I remember Granddaddy, he just kind of had his hat on.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, all right. And he said, let's go back to the house. And he went back and got his old double barrel shotgun, grabbed one of the dogs out of the yard, taking his time. I don't know whether he was relishing it or he just wanted to make me wait or what. But, and we got back there and it was a perfect shot. But I felt at that moment, I felt like I had arrived.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I did too.
Because Granddaddy, it was just like, even though Granddaddy didn't deer hunt,
right?
It was like him being there kind of gave me, kind of was the welcome into the club.
Type right, thing. Exactly.
You know, that he would get his shotgun out and a dog and help me go get it and all that. I just felt like I had arrived.
Mm-hmm. You did a good job.
And then there's a story about we took that deer back to the house and started cleaning it, and I cut the fire out of my thumb, and you finished cleaning the deer for me.
I don't remember all that. Cleaned, I guess I was in shock.
I cut my thumb just skinning it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And then you and Dad finished cleaning my first deer for me.
And then we had to carry it in the car.
The car to the cooler. Well, okay. let's grab a quick break right here and come back and finish up the show. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. You know, this one's just for fun. You ready for this one?
Yes.
The bull.
Oh no, not the bull. Not the bull. Not my orange and black, white striped dress. Go ahead.
This has got nothing to do with hunting or growing up outdoors. It does have something to growing up outdoors because we had cows. And we loved our cows. But I was there. I witnessed the whole thing. We had a young bull.
Yes.
He was young.
We had just gotten him.
He was actually tied up at the time. Mm-hmm. Dad was building the loading pen. Mm-hmm. So Dad was up on a ladder. And go ahead. Take it from there. Tell us about the bull.
Well, I didn't trust the bull. I thought I was far enough away from him. But as I walked by, I had this orange and black and white striped dress on. And the bull lowered his head, and I said, "Bill, this bull is going to charge me." Well, he did. He kept closer and closer. And I started backing up, and I fell flat on my back.
Right.
My legs and hands were just frailing.
Yeah.
The bull got closer. And so I was screaming for Bill. He was up on a ladder. So he couldn't come help me.
Yeah.
I thought I was a goner.
Yeah.
But I guess I made enough noise and looked so funny, the bull did back off. And I rolled up and I ran.
Yep.
I hated that bull.
He was a young black Angus bull. You know?
Big head.
Yeah, big head. That bull, he got to be over 2,000 pounds,
yes, he
I think.
Did.
He was a huge bull. When he got older.
Yeah. Well, you remember, we have a picture of you feeding him. His head is sticking out as a catching pin.
Yeah. And the neck lock wouldn't lock on him. Dad had manufactured a lock so you could put a cow's head through this yoke
mm-hmm.
and pull down and you kind of lock him in there.
Mm-hmm.
And you could not begin to close the lock on that bull.
Right.
His neck was so big. And I remember you had a fit. Dad was letting me feed him.
Yes. We got a picture of you standing there with this bucket of feed, and the bull's head is in the bucket. And scared me.
But I remember that. I mean, Mom's feet and arms were going. She was making all sorts of noises.
Six of each.
And I tell you, that bull pulled up and looked at her like, "I don't think I want to tangle with that one." That's just a funny one, but I remember Dad, he was up on the ladder and it was all over by the time he got there. But I was just a little kid watching you.
Right.
I'm about to get run over by a bull. I remember, speaking of bulls, you remember Mr. Weldon had one.
Yes. Oh,
and
yes.
They'd get on that back fence line and walk up and down blowing at each other, and one of them would get through a fence. I remember one time, we were fishing.
Yes.
At the pond.
Right.
And Mr. Weldon's bull got across
mm-hmm.
and came up and chased us. I don't think he really ran at us.
Well, we got over the fence.
Well, you want to know how I got over the fence?
Uh-uh.
You grabbed my belt loop in the back of my shirt and pitched me over the fence.
He was coming after us.
He was another big bull.
Right. He was.
And I remember
huge.
He followed us all the way to the fence line, all the way to the house.
All the way. Yeah. That was as bad as Kenneth's cow coming up on the porch. And I thought the cow was going to come in the house. I called Kenny and told him he had to do something about this cow.
Oh, me. Okay. Boy, I tell you, growing up in the country, just it's just irreplaceable experiences.
It is.
And I know a lot of people these days don't get that experience and all, but for us, it was the best.
It was the best. So thankful. Just so thankful.
And I was asked, talking to you during the break about, you know, Dad didn't hunt, and but he let us go hunting, and you were scared to death when he gave us the guns, but he prepared us for that, and he taught us how to be safe, and impressed upon us, look, it's, you know, you have the ability to kill things with this. Mm-hmm. It is, you respect what you shoot at. You made us eat what we killed. And it's all worked out, and look where we are today.
It was a profound responsibility, and still is, and always will be.
Yeah. And for parents out there that are giving those kids their first gun for Christmas.
Right.
Or thinking about it, the kids ask for it, you know, take the mystery out of it.
Exactly.
Be hands-on with them, prepare them, and you won't have to worry about them when you
see,
kick them out the door.
We always had a shotgun behind the door.
Yeah.
And we never touched it.
That's
never
right.
Picked it up.
That's it.
It was always there.
Yep.
But it was understood we were not to touch it.
Thanks.
You're welcome. I love
you. I appreciate all you've done for me in my life, and it's got me here.
Well, I'm proud of you. I appreciate what you've been to us. And I think it's a privilege to have come and done this with you today.
Thank you. All right, people. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving. Don't eat too much. Make plans to get out there, take some back roads. Be careful, and don't forget the camera. See you next time on Woods and Water, South Carolina.